Just around the corner from those Oscars on Monday in LA is a fossil trove that's almost beyond belief. In size, in location. It's the La Brea Tar Pits. Ken Campbell is curator of ornithology at the LA County Museum, and he's collecting tiny owls there.
Well, a tar pit is not actually a pit. It's an area where oil, crude petroleum, comes out to the surface of the ground and just spreads across the surface. And as oil spreads out across the ground, the lighter constituents evaporate, leaving behind the more sticky stuff that we often refer to as asphalt.
And where you look for your specimens is still a tar pit, and it's been going for some time. How big is it?
There are two things going on at the tar pits at the moment, and one of them is the preparation of several large jackets, that we call them, that were excavated when a parking structure was built nearby. And these are being excavated as if they were still in the ground. The only excavation in progress is that of Pit 91, and that has actually been going on since 1969, and is temporarily suspended while the work is progressing on the jackets from the construction site.
Los Angeles is still sitting on an oil field.
Oh, yes. It's still sitting on an oil field, and oil is still being pumped out from underground, even in Beverly Hills.
Now, when you excavate, I've got a picture of there being hot tar that would cook the animals, but presumably if you're going to have preserved skeletons, they're not subjected to anything really harsh in a way of decomposition.
Petroleum, when it comes out of the ground, is going to be at room temperature, and the temperature of the surroundings is a major factor in determining whether or not animals are stuck, whether or not they get their feet caught in the tar, because if it's too cold, petroleum asphalt will have a hard surface, and you can actually walk on it without a problem. But if it's a hot day, asphalt will be very sticky.
Have you a picture of the way in which the big birds, the vultures and the condors, got caught in the first place?
The larger birds would have been attracted to the large dead mammals that would have been stuck in the tar and had died there. And vultures tend to congregate, feed in groups, and they often are like a big squabbling family competing with each other for parts of the carcass. And if it were a particularly warm day, and if it were a major seep, then there would be large areas covered with the petroleum, and the birds could get their wings coated with the tar, with the asphalt, and they would also, if they were walking around the carcass, could themselves be stuck.
And so what happened now to enable you to get the smaller birds out, the owls that you've been looking at?
Well, the smaller birds are being preserved today because, well, one, we are excavating with dental tools and small brushes and saving everything from the excavation site, as opposed to in the early part of the last century, they were using pickaxes and shovels. The fossils at Rancho La Brea fall into the age range of about 10 to 40,000 years. How far back in time the owls that we see preserved there, how far back in time they went, we simply don't know. And there are 9 species in total, 9 species of owls. 3 of them are extinct.
Well, that's Ken Campbell, who's curator of ornithology at the Los Angeles County Museum. And talking about the tar pits, I've come to the tar pit, which here is about the size of a substantial lake. And you can see the oil slick on the surface and some grass and a fence around it. And at one end, you've got a mammoth coming out. And at this other end, a mammoth rampaging. It's obviously a model. At least I assume it's a model. And you've got methane bubbling out of the water. I'm with Trevor Valley, who does his research here. Is that real methane coming out there?
Absolutely. The methane that is coming out is, we believe, we've had a local university do some research on it. There's numerous hundreds of different species of bacteria that are living in the oil itself and digesting it and effectively, well, off-gassing. So it's maybe slightly geologically produced, but also majority of it may be biological methane.
Still active. How deep does the water go in the tar?
Well, this lake pit was originally an asphalt quarry, and it's only a few feet deep in some areas, but it can sink almost to 8 or 10 feet near the center. It's a fairly deep one, to the point where we have one of those mammoths mired and bolted down for the paying guests to see.
Do you mean mammoths really were dug out of this pit?
We have another pit that we colloquially call the elephant pit because a majority of our mammoth and mastodon specimens came from there.
How amazing. How many different kinds of creature did you get out of these tar pits?
Well, we have an estimated collection of 3.5 million specimens that range over 650 species of plants and animals. Big cats, very large elephant-like creatures like mammoths, even some modern animals such as pumas or mountain lions and coyotes are all represented in our collection. So we have both extinct and extant animals over a very large collection.
And lots of wolves.
Lots of wolves. The dire wolf, Canis deeris, is our most common fossil that we find. We have a single wall in our museum with over 400 skulls mounted on it, just to give you an idea, and that's less than 10% of our estimated collection.
Yes, I must describe, we're actually in the middle of Los Angeles, just off Wilshire Boulevard, and you've got grounds, you've got a park, you've got the big sort of lake, which is the tar pit, and the smell of aromatics is just amazing, of petrol or tar. And there's a big set of laboratories and a museum here on site, which, as I understand it, contains mainly stuff you've got from this place itself.
It actually only contains stuff from this place. Rancho La Brea in Hancock Park was a land grant of 23 acres to the County of Los Angeles. Our museum contains the fossils that were found on these 23 acres, and every day we pull out more. So not only are we a museum with all of the material found in the park on site, it's cleaned on site, it's housed on site, and if we were to use a time machine and go back in time right where we're standing 30,000 years ago, we would see these mammoths and mastodons walking straight through the park. So they wandered through, they died here, they were excavated here, cleaned, and stored here. We're a site museum. And there's more to come.
It's more to come. Well, let's wander over because you were about to take me to where the excavation is actually happening now. And Trevor, I can't help noticing that you carry some of your work with you, actually, as tattoos.
Yes.
On arms and legs. What are they?
Well, I'm of a new generation of scientists and paleontologists. We're getting very into our work, so I have tattoos of a lot of my different disciplines. I'm a herpetologist and also a marine biologist. I've studied reptiles, sharks, saltwater crocodiles, and snakes. So I've got saltwater crocodiles, saber-toothed cats, dinosaurs, trilobites. I have 19 tattoos, and I think about 10 of them are work-related.
Are they accurate?
Very accurate. Actually, one on my left arm of a horned lizard. The horned lizard is a convergent evolution animal in our desert, much like the thorny devil or the moloch in Australia. It's actually based on a scientific illustration of
Wow.
that specific species. So, yeah, I've looked far and wide for just the right work to be done. I don't look like a scientist. Most people think I'm in a band or something. But no, I have 2 master's degrees, and I help run a lab at a world-famous museum.
And you've taken all this pain for your science.
Yeah, pretty much. Little blood, little sweat, little tears, lots of needles.
And as we walk through, we've come to another area where there's water and another big fence and obviously some canvas. It looks as if here might be one of the sites where you're digging.
This is the site. Off to the side of us are 4 pits, 3, 4, 61, and 67, where numerous animals were recovered. And then where we're going is our previous excavation, Pit 91, and our new excavation, Project 23, which is quite possibly one of the most amazing and important Ice Age digs in the last 100 years.
Anyway.
At least here and pretty much anywhere, at least in my opinion. It's amazing. We've found more things in Project 23, such as articulated skeletons, some fairly rare animals, and possibly we have a whole bunch more to go. We may even discover new species here.
Well, it's most extraordinary. This is going on in the middle of Los Angeles, I must remind. And it says there, Page Museum, Pit Excavation 91. And Mr. Page is your benefactor, of course, who gave a chunk of money which enabled this really extraordinary place to be opened.
Exactly. Mr. Page was a large fan of the tar pits and was actually rather saddened there was not a museum here when he first came, and decided in 1975 to be the benefactor, and ended up in 1977 opening the building.
And you're about to do the same with your key. Right, we're in. And great big crates, thousands of cans. What are the cans for?
The cans, and you're right, there are thousands of them. I've actually lost count how many. Each one of these cans contains matrix or sediment from one of the grids in one of the excavations. So near us, one of the larger boxes is box 14. And every time they clear out a grid, each grid is 1 meter square, each level is to the depth of 25 centimeters. So that almost fills a bucket. So when they clear out a grid, they put it into the bucket, they pull out any of the larger bones after they measure them in place, and then those get sent into the lab. The matrix itself, the sediment, sits in these buckets and waits to be processed through a series of washings. They first use water to break down a majority of the clay, then they use a solvent to reliquefy the oil in the asphalt, and that breaks it down to a point where we can turn a 5-gallon bucket into a 1-pound coffee can. And at that point, it comes into the lab, and we look through it with magnifying glasses and paintbrushes, grain by grain.
So meticulous. It's incredible.
We have to be. Our entire goal is to collect everything, because the large bones, such as the mammoths and the saber-toothed cats, they didn't necessarily live in this park, but they did die here. A mouse will live its entire life in the same 2 acres. So while the saber-toothed cats were cruising through the park, finding food or getting stuck in an asphalt trap, the mice, the reptiles, the shrews, the small birds, they were actually living in this park. That, combined with the plant material we find through microfossil sorting, freshwater shells, insects, all of that can actually give us an idea of what the environment was like, what the ecosystem was, and how these large animals interacted with it.
For once, the word awesome is appropriate.
It is large and rather awe-inspiring, and it's a lot of fun, to be completely honest. I love this place.
And there's a gigantic hole.
Yes, this is Pit 91. It was one of the original excavations and then was closed. And with great celebration, it was reopened in 1969. And every summer, it was dug for about 6 to 8 weeks. And, you know, maybe 2,000 to 3,000 specimens per season were pulled out of here. It is well documented. It was the first pit that we actually used a complete excavation theory on. Every single scrap of material will be gone through at some point from Pit 91. Most of the large concentrations of new animals, plant material, and all that came from study of Pit 91 over the last 30 years.
And the smell of tar is unmistakable.
I can't actually smell it anymore.
Good luck.
I know there is methane, there's hydrogen sulfide, you can smell the hydrocarbons of the oil itself. I'm completely immune to it. There's maybe a slight twinge, but not the overpowering that we get. Some people actually explain to us, and we're like, no, we can't really smell it anymore, sorry. We get very used to it.
I can see movement over there in one distant part of it. Is that something bubbling or what?
Yes, Pit 91 is one of the lower places in the park, so we do have a large amount of groundwater that seeps in. So in the southeast corner here, we do have a sump pump. So every once in a while, we'll have either methane or an air bubble that's trapped in the line bubble up to the surface. We're trying to clean up Pit 91 because of the groundwater, retrenching, making all the water go over to the sump pump in order to make it a little bit cleaner for when we begin re-excavating it.
Yeah, it's going bloop, bloop.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the lab.
Okay.
Okay, we've come inside and we're looking at almost an unending line of trays and collected bones. Goes on for about, nearly 200 metres. How many thousands of bones are there in this storage place, Trevor?
Probably millions, because each one of these drawers is not a single fossil, it's multiple fossils. If you open one of them, it's an entire tray of nothing but short-faced bear teeth, or broken saber-toothed cat ribs, or even a series of 5 to 7 coyote skulls, all in a single drawer. So this is our primary ossuary, or bone room, and this is where we store a majority of our collection from the carnivores, the small carnivores, bobcats and coyotes, all the way up to the mega herbivores like the sloths and the mammoths.
And presumably, if you're going to prepare them and examine them, you'll be finished by about the year 5000?
Well, these are actually all cleaned. These are all previously prepared and cataloged specimens. If you have a catalog number, say if you want to see every right humerus of saber-toothed cats, we can go in here and pull them all. These are all finished, prepared specimens. All of this stuff is on record for researchers to use.
Do you send it out? Almost like an Amazon fossil fund?
No, they come here. Just recently we had a researcher named Blanca from Madrid come just to measure any element she can on carnivores. And that's the entire aisle to the right here is nothing but carnivores. So she spent 3 months doing that, and that was her second trip. So we are a type locality. Rancho La Brea and Land Mammal Age is named after us. So if you find a saber-toothed cat skull somewhere in, say, Florida or anywhere in the States, you're going to come here to study it.
Yeah. Well, Trevor, let's go inside to where your lab is and see what you're working on at the moment. And I think I have a fair idea. Past some trays of jawbones.
Yeah, those are all saber-toothed cat jaws right there, just sitting around, waiting to be cleaned.
And some pictures of some guys with great big moustaches in the old days who obviously were digging things up something like 100 years ago. And skull after skull after skull, huge teeth. And we come to here. Tell me.
That, you just mentioned huge teeth, and nothing gets bigger than this. This is a jaw of Zed. Zed is our Colombian mammoth. He's our newest Colombian mammoth, and he's the most special. He came out of Project 23, and Project 23 is kind of changing the way we look at the La Brea tar pits now, because Zed is a articulated, associated individual. Normally in the pits, it's just a jumble of bones. If we find the jaw of a wolf near a skull of a wolf, unless it's connected, it's hard to tell whether or not that's the same animal. The mounted skeletons we have in the museum are all composites. They're all the correct size and shape, and they all belong to the right species of animal, but each bone can be thousands of years older and younger next to the one that it's mounted to. Zed is different. Zed is one individual.
Mammoth.
He is one individual Colombian mammoth. The jaw that we're standing near goes to the skull that's behind us, which the tusk to our right mounts into, that is held up by the arm bone, the humerus at the front of the lab, and is connected to the ribs and the vertebra and the pelvis that we have in storage. He is an 80% complete mammoth. He is an absolutely huge individual. He weighs more than any mammoth we'd previously discovered here. He's probably around 18,000 pounds and is about 20% more massive than the one we have mounted on display. So he's the center in a rugby scrum. He's the really big guy that you do not want to mess with.
Vast jaw. And as for the tusks, well over 2 meters.
Well over 2 meters. It's bordering on about maybe 2.5.
2.5 meters. Imagine the kind of neck muscles to hold that up.
Very short, thick, powerful neck. Think of the largest African elephant you've seen, make it a little bit bigger. And so they had very long curving trunks, very long curving tusks. They were large, heavy animals eating 600 pounds of vegetation a day. So they were moving grazers. And their teeth were large. They were just huge. To the point, just like modern elephants today, once they got to a certain size, they probably were not picked on too much. But the babies, the sick, and the infirm may have been targets for some of the largest predators to ever exist, such as the American lion, also known as the giant jaguar, or the short-faced bear. Hmm. Really large things. It was the true Wild West here.
It certainly is. And the top of the skull, you've got it wrapped or something. No, it's still in the earth, isn't it? And you've got blobs of tar there.
Yes. Zed's skull is actually presented upside down because, unfortunately, Zed was discovered by a large piece of earth-moving equipment that took off about the top 6 to 8 inches of his skull. So when he was prepared in the field, he was what we call jacketed. Bits of burlap and plaster were mixed together, wrapped around the sediment surrounding him, and he was brought into the lab, so we're slowly excavating him out. But we can see his molars, entry to the brain cavity, his cheekbones. He's actually a very remarkably well-preserved specimen for getting hit by a bulldozer.
Well, it's a stunning place, and here in the lab, you're surrounded by glass, which means visitors can not only see the displays, which are remarkable, these skeletons going on forever, complete ones, rampant ones, and as you said, a whole wall of dire wolf skulls. I mean, it's artistically impressive as well. If visitors wanted to come from Australia or anywhere else in the world, what's the arrangement? You pay your money, you come in.
That's pretty much it. You park in the car park, you come to the entrance, you pay actually a very surprisingly affordable fee, and come right in. Now, the park itself is free. You can visit the park, look at the excavation, even look at the tar pits, all for free, just because it's a Los Angeles County park. But the museum itself does have an admission. But you can come in, and the neat thing about where we're standing now in the fishbowl is you can look into the fishbowl and see paleontology at work. You can see myself, my boss, and our volunteers cleaning fossils. You can even volunteer to do so if you have about 3 months of your time available. And the nicest thing is, it shows that we're more than just finished exhibits. We are a research institution. For the late Pleistocene, every day we're finding something new and exciting, and the public can look through the glass and see us do it and see the lights click on in our heads and the smiles come across our face whenever it happens.
The smiling Trevor Valley of the Tar Pit in the middle of LA, inches from Beverly Hills. Worth seeing indeed. Next week, Fukushima, Ireland, and a Canadian astronaut, the first to captain a mission. The Science Show is produced by David Fisher and Luke Purse, so do keep unfolding. I'm Robin Williams.
We